teaming up to battle the ban on gay marriage. Will corporate involvement make a difference? A lawsuit challenges the state's new abortion law, an effort to regulate tanning beds, and the crisis in Egypt through the eyes of an Indiana congressman. That plus Duane Sawyer, Rupert, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 23, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, a pair of corporate giants joined a new coalition. The goal is to defeat a proposed ban on gay marriage. Eli Lilly and Company joined with Cummins Incorporated in support of the organization calling itself Freedom Indiana. They both believe that a ban on gay marriage will limit their ability to attract new talent to Indiana. The new political organization will battle the marriage amendment in the 2014 General Assembly and beyond if necessary. The campaign manager for Freedom Indiana is Republican Megan Robertson. She has worked for Greg Ballard and Luke Messer, among others.
This is a bipartisan initiative that requires all of us to work together to protect our Indiana Constitution.
It's a broad-based coalition. We think it's the right message for the right time.
We want Indiana to be an attractive place to live and a wonderful place to do business. And we want those outside of our state to view Indiana in the same way.
The Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey conducted last year showed that only 38% support the marriage amendment, while 54% oppose it. Will this new coalition be successful? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Bill Morrill, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, does this take the gay rights debate to a new level?
Yes. I mean, clearly, this is going to be heard in this next session of the legislature. I think it will drive the agenda for the legislature. I hope that if it is heard, that it's heard early so that it can be debated and dealt with, so that other issues can be played out over the course of the session. This changes everything going into the session. It will drive a lot of the debate. It'll drive everything that goes on there. And I'm told by both leaders, the House and the Senate, that they are going to give it a hearing. Now, having said all that, this thing passed the last time it was voted on with 80 votes in the House, 40 votes in the Senate. Those are pretty big numbers. And so if it is given a vote, there would have to be a lot of fall off in both of those houses for the outcome to change. But I'm told that there may be efforts to amend it. And if it's amended, then the whole thing starts over again.
It's a five-year process. If you amend it, you go back to the beginning of
right.
The five-year process. Do you think that's likely?
The amendment? Well, look, I attended the rally, and I was sure proud to see our client, Eli Lilly and Company, out there on point making the case, because it's an economic case, right? It has to do with the kind of message that the state of Indiana sends to the rest of the country and, frankly, to its own citizens. You know, if you're going to attract and retain, attract and retain the kind of people that are needed for our economy, this is the very wrong signal. Now, procedurally, which is your question, you're absolutely right. If the matter is amended, you start over. And it's the second sentence of that resolution that causes a lot of smart lawyers to worry about what impact it would have on a whole
vote. It would seem to outlaw civil unions.
It would seem to. It does outlaw civil unions. Whether it has an effect on the application of domestic partner benefits, especially for state institutions, is another question.
All right. Lilly and Cummins have spoken out before, but this is a coalition that's been put together aiming toward a referendum.
That's exactly right. I think the assumption is that the legislature will pass this, and then it will go to the voters at some point next year, probably in the fall, I believe. And so I think that's what this is being built for. But I do think it's an interesting thing. If they do try to amend it, it could be an interesting tactic, because that buys actually proponents of this 5 more years to work on this. They're losing the battle of demographics right now. And if they can buy a 5-year cooling off period, then that essentially allows them to avoid what could happen, and I think is very likely, is a rebound. Not only does the amendment get defeated, but it also builds an impetus for passing a gay marriage bill in Indiana at some point in the near future. And that 5-year cooling off period might be exactly what some of the people who want this amendment to pass are looking at.
This is sometimes thought to be a partisan issue, with the Republicans against gay marriage, Democrats favoring it. But this was they talk about it being bipartisan, but there were a lot of Republicans at this rally.
There were a lot of Republicans. There were a lot of young Republicans at this rally, which is something that Republicans have to think about in terms of their own demographics, where the party is going in the future, and whether they want this to be one of the most important issues that they push during the upcoming session. John talked about the fact that he thinks this is mostly aimed at the referendum, and I think that's true. But I actually think they have a chance to defeat this in the General Assembly. I actually think the proponents' best shot is to try to amend it. And that allows proponents of this and those folks who are on the fence to vote yes for something with knowing that it isn't going to take effect anytime soon.
It's a hot potato.
Jim, the politics of this are fascinating. First of all, you've got Democrats now on record in their party platform opposing this amendment, Republicans supporting the amendment. And I talk to Republicans who say they hope this issue goes away, because if it's on the ballot in November, it will completely change the political environment for Republicans.
You think what you're saying is it will bring people to the polls who will vote for Democratic candidates?
It will. I mean, this is an off-year election, right? And without this amendment on the ballot, it would be a normal off-year election after a presidential, which would favor the Republicans.
Is that part of the political calculus for Republicans?
I think Leslie is wrong about the idea that it would be defeated or could be defeated. I think if it's voted on the way it is now, it will pass the Indiana General Assembly. Probably not with the numbers that it passed 2 years ago, because there is some fall off. But anytime you start with 80, it's a long way down to 49.
That's right.
And anytime you start with 40, it's a long way down to, you know, to 24. So those numbers, I think, are problematic for those who want to see this fail. But I do think there will be that effort to make a change, and it is fascinating stuff. I don't think we know for sure who this drives to the polls on Election Day. That's a great unknown, and what you've got is huge majorities for the Republican Party.
It's likely to drive people who feel strongly on both sides.
Well,
that's right.
And
you've got a lot of conservatives who still
both
think
party
this is important.
Or in both houses for the Republicans, and this could play a role in primary politics in the Republican Party, too.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is gay marriage an economic issue? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. We have no results from last week's question because of a technical problem. We apologize. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Planned Parenthood has filed a federal lawsuit challenging a new law meant to restrict abortions in Indiana. The law requires a clinic in Lafayette, which performs non-surgical abortions, to have the same facilities as a surgical center. That includes recovery and scrub rooms. The ACLU of Indiana and Planned Parenthood filed a suit that calls the requirements irrational. Planned Parenthood's Betty Cockrell.
It's troubling that the lead legislator on this one said right up front that he was proposing this legislation because of his own personal and religious beliefs. And the last time I checked, that was not the premise for which Indiana law was to be made.
That lead legislator is State Senator Travis Holdman, who chose not to comment on the lawsuit. Bill Morrill, will this lawsuit be successful?
You know, I've had a chance to read the statute. I've had a chance to actually read the complaint that was filed. And, you know, sometimes things appear exactly as they are. The clear intent of this legislation is to shut down a single clinic. And that has 14th Amendment problems, okay? Equal protection notions. And here, you've got a statute that, if carried to its logical extension, would say that pharmacies ought to have emergency rooms in them.
Because they're dispensing pills.
Because they're dispensing pills that can have side effects, right, and complications. So I think that this litigation has a very, very strong chance of being successful.
What we've seen here is the legislature trying to figure out just how far they can go within the Constitution to restrict abortion. They tried to take money away from Planned Parenthood, Medicaid money away. Planned Parenthood filed a lawsuit, went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they won. So instead of this being fought out in the legislature or just in the legislature, Planned Parenthood keeps going to court and has a pretty good record.
It's a 2-to-1 count at this point as far as lawsuits are concerned, with Planned Parenthood with the two. Yeah. I think the difference this time is, since it doesn't involve federal money or the federal government, it's going to be hard for a court to overturn what a state legislature wants to do. That's my personal opinion about where this will come down. Yes, the answer to your question is yes. Are they trying to nibble away at what's going on here? Yeah, they want to see how far they can go with this. I think it's hard to prove that they're all about one clinic in one place, and I think that's problematic for this particular lawsuit. But these are very, very emotional issues for a lot of people, continue to be, and they will be for as long as we're talking about these things.
And if it's not this issue, it'll be another.
In terms of abortion, there will continue to be efforts by the Republican legislature to find ways to try to restrict abortions. They are going to try over and over and over again. No matter how this issue ends up in court, they're going to try again and again, and they have a friend in Mike Pence. I'm not sure we're going to see Mike Pence leading on this issue, but he certainly isn't going to be discouraging on this issue either, and I think he'll be ready with his pen to sign any of those bills.
Certainly he signed this one.
Oh, yeah, in about 2 seconds after it got to his desk. I think that Leslie's analysis is exactly right, but I also think it's important to understand that the system's working the way it should. Democrats don't have a way to defeat this in the legislature, or people, I shouldn't say Democrats, I should say people who are in favor of greater abortion rights.
Who include some Republicans on occasion.
In the legislature, so that's what the judicial branch is for. And, Planned Parenthood is exercising its ability under the courts to challenge these laws.
So you pass legislation that's intended.
I'm not saying it makes sense.
No. I'm not the most efficient way to do things. You pass legislation that is intended to shut down the place that offers a non-surgical approach to this, right?
One would think a less objectionable approach.
One would think a less potentially harmful and problematic approach, which sets up obvious litigation on which state funds are going to be paid, and mark my words, the state will pay the ACLU's attorney's fees in this. Is that a good use of resources and time and energy?
What's interesting here is I think it's easy for Planned Parenthood to make the case that it's all about one clinic. And certainly it feels very much like it's all about one clinic, especially because the legislature didn't include doctor's offices where the pill can also be administered. At the same time, though, Planned Parenthood does use the pill in other places. It's just that in this one place,
this is the one
it's
place that
all
doesn't
they
have surgical
That's
facility.
Right.
It doesn't
right.
have the surgical
facility. Right,
exactly.
Right.
Good clarification.
Yes, all right. Right. The push is on to keep Indiana teenagers out of tanning salons. According to a new report in the Journal of the American Medical Association, indoor tanning before the age of 35 increases melanoma risks by up to 75%. Skincare experts are urging Indiana lawmakers to pass a new law that would prohibit Hoosiers under the age of 18 from using a tanning bed.
There are dangers from indoor tanning. The tanning does increase the risk of skin cancer and melanoma.
That is dermatologist Dr. Kerry Davis. John Ketzenberger. No, we're going to go to Leslie on this one. Leslie Weidenbender. Do we need a law for that?
I don't think that we'll end up with a law for that. I think the truth is the legislature is loath to pass anything that puts that hurts businesses generally, even in this kind of situation. I mean, look what they've done with the deer facilities. I don't want to do anything to hurt even them. So I doubt very much that they would go down that road. But I think the message here, I mean, I think people need to hear the message that these tanning beds are not good for young people.
Tanning beds for Bambi, is that what you're saying?
But this is in a summer study committee, and the reason it's in a summer study committee is because people want to figure out whether or not it makes sense to pass a law before they actually consider one.
Boy, and you call me naive sometimes. I think that it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of this, because we just talked about abortion and these bills that keep being passed, these restrictions that keep being made, but we don't want to make any restrictions on a business that might be causing cancer or contributing to the cause of cancer in people that are using it. So, yeah, there's a consistency question here, too, I think.
We try to keep kids away from tobacco. We try to keep them away from alcohol. We try to keep them away from firearms. We try to keep them away from automobiles. For crying out loud, why can't we take some steps to try to keep them away from killing themselves over time?
But you'll note that in Indiana, it took longer to ban kids from a lot of those things than it did in a lot of other states. Well, not a lot of states have banned tanning bed use for kids at this point, and I'd be shocked if Indiana was
Illinois
among
has.
The first.
Illinois
so has.
So has
California. There have been states.
Actually, there are 46 pieces of legislation in 31 states right now. I do represent the Indiana Academy of Dermatologists, and I am involved in this debate. But clearly, we had dermatologists after dermatologists say they see it every day, that young people coming to their various offices showing and coming up with melanoma, which is the most serious form of skin cancer you can have, that causes death all over this country every day. And this something has to happen here, because a lot of these are 18, less than 18, 16, 14, 15 year old kids who are going into these places. Right now the law says you have to have parental consent. You can go to one of these places, take the form home, and have mom and dad sign it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Wink, wink.
Right.
You know, that's a problem. The World Health Organization, the FDA, have both determined that these beds are carcinogens to human beings. So this is a bad news situation. We got to press forward on this issue.
All right. What to do about Egypt? It's an important question for an Indiana congressman who serves on the Foreign Affairs Committee. With the Egyptian military cracking down on the Muslim Brotherhood, with daily riots and demonstrations and 1,000 recent casualties, Congressman Luke Messer worries that the Obama administration policy on Egypt is unclear.
I think that we need to be careful that we don't inadvertently send the message that we support the Muslim Brotherhood more than we support democracy in the region.
Just a week ago, Messer met with Israeli President Shimon Peres along with Susan Brooks, and they came away with optimism. This is from an interview conducted in Jerusalem.
There is hope here for peace. There is hope here. They want the generations, the young people in particular, and future generations to live in peace.
Messer also met with the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, who, he said, was more concerned about instability in Iran and Syria than in Egypt.
There is a hope that peace can happen in this region of the world.
Now the optimism has become concern, and Messer supports a continuation of American military aid to Egypt as the administration considers suspending it.
I think it's important to send the message that the violence must stop and the democratic processes should continue. I would support continuing the aid conditioned on those requirements rather than cutting the aid right now.
John Ketzenberger, do you think the average Indiana voter knows or cares about what's going on in Egypt?
Well, let me split that. I don't think they know. I think most of us are grappling with trying to understand exactly what's going on in Egypt, in particular in the Middle East in large. But I think we should care about it, and I think that the more we can learn about it, the better off we are. It makes me nostalgic. We were talking earlier, it makes me a little nostalgic for Senator Lugar and his expertise, which was brought to bear in so many foreign relation situations. But I think Hoosiers better pay attention because this is important.
There's a lot of education that is being done even at the congressional level. I mean, Susan Brooks and Luke Messer were over there last week. So was Jackie Walorski. 67 members of Congress who are freshmen, two-thirds of them have been to Israel this year to try to figure out what's going on in the Middle East.
Well, they'd be among many people trying to figure out what's going on in the Middle East. I mean, this is a terrible situation in Egypt. It's a difficult, complicated situation in the Middle East, and I'm I would not want to be in the situation of Luke Messer and the other congressional folks trying to figure out what should be done here. It's very hard.
He's offering mild criticism of the Obama administration. What he's passing along there is pretty much a Republican line. But it seems like when it comes to gridlock and polarization in Congress, when it comes to foreign affairs, there's more of a willingness to go along.
Actually, I thought he showed a lot of restraint. I thought the fact that he used the word inadvertently sending a message tells me that he thinks that there is uncertainty there about what messages we're sending, but that we need to get it right, and that I thought he was giving them a lot of credit for at least trying to deal with something there. You know, these trips are invaluable for these folks to do this, and especially when you're a freshman member of Congress, to find out what's going on. Of course, he serves on foreign relations, which is pretty important for him to go in particular. Yes, they need to be concerned. Hoosiers need to be concerned about what's going on there, because the consequences long-term for all of us is pretty severe if things don't go right there.
This whole debate over do we cut aid, do we give them aid, do we try to send messages in the meantime, it's hard to influence what's actually going on.
You know, I applaud Congressman Messer for having a measured statement, certainly more measured than Senator McCain and some others have come out with. Of course, I got my start serving on a Senate staff, so I know how, frankly, easy when it comes to foreign policy to articulate positions, right, when you're in Congress rather than in the White House where the real decisions have to be made. At least it sounds like Congressman Messer has articulated a position. He would prefer the current government over the prior government. That is a very, very tough foreign policy choice, and I was now going to go in and explain what the Obama policy is, but I can't, and therein lies another problem, right?
Sure. Back to the State House. The first African-American Republican to hold statewide office in Indiana was sworn in this week. Dwayne Sawyer took the oath from Chief Justice Brent Dixon to officially become state auditor. He'll serve out the remainder of former auditor Tim Berry's term. Berry left to become state GOP chairman.
I can assure you we will give our best effort and strive to stand firm, protecting Indiana's financial resources by being fiscally conservative and following the examples of the servant leaders who came before us.
Bill Morrow, do you expect Dwayne Sawyer to have a high profile?
I think he will. Yeah, I think he certainly needs to get around to the Lincoln Day dinners and that sort of thing pretty quickly so that he can enjoy his 16 months at office, because the Democrats are rallying around a fellow by the name of Mike Clater,
who's the State Board of Accounts.
He was the number two guy in the State Board of Accounts, then spent a career at a very distinguished accounting firm. He's an accountant and a lawyer, and he knows this stuff, and he's going to be a real, real live candidate.
Well,
on our
what's
side.
What's most unusual about that is that you got a Democrat statewide candidate who's identified early and out there working, right?
I'm kidding.
I think his description as a live candidate, yeah, a real live candidate, tells me.
Wait a minute, I think Morrow is speechless.
Yeah. Is he going to have a high profile?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, he's a very impressive guy, and he's got the credentials for the job. And he's articulate, and I think he will be out there and working hard, and I think he's going to be a superstar long-term in our party.
Finally, running for governor didn't work out for Rupert, so he's back on Survivor. The former Libertarian candidate is returning to the CBS show along with his wife, Laura. The new season is called Survivor Blood versus Water. It pits family members against each other. Producers say the game will, as the name suggests, test what's thicker, blood or water. Rupert and his wife filmed the show last year, leaving behind their only child.
I've unfortunately had to leave Rhea a few times for extended periods. This is the first time Laura's been away from Rhea, and yeah, we left 3 days before her 14th birthday.
Yes.
Our only child, our only baby that, you know, is our world. But she realizes when she starts school next year and both mom and dad are on TV.
That's pretty cool.
Mike McDaniel, does that do anything to cast his run for governor in a different light?
Well, look, he'll find that running for governor was a whole lot harder than this was. I think he already knows that.
He's been more successful at this.
This guy's got a big heart. He does a lot of wonderful things for a lot of people. More power to him if he can regain that fame and keep building on the positive things and use it in that way, we're all ahead of the game.
A lot of people thought he was using his TV career to be a politician. Turns out maybe being a politician helped him resume his TV career.
What if he gets 4% of the vote on Survivor, though? That's not a good outcome for him, is it?
Won't be enough, will it?
It's a good question. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Bill Morrow, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.